This is your warlord of weird, Sinbodi, and you're listening to the Bad Boys of Las Vegas podcast. I suggest you check your ears, check your brains, check everything else. Make sure you're in your right mind if you're listening to these clowns. Trust me, I know what I'm talking about. Deep, 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 deep.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.
Welcome to another edition of Vegas Bad Boys, the podcasting. I'm your host, DJ Impact. I got some of the bad boys here with me, like Simon Street.
What's up?
Good, good, good. And Matt Michaels, how are you?
I'm feeling pretty sinful today.
I wonder what that means.
I don't know. Tell us.
Does it involve staples?
It could.
Man.
Thumbtacks?
And most importantly, Legos.
Legos? Masks?
Wait. The same ones that I stepped my foot in because of the kids?
Yeah, exactly.
The guy we have here on our phone, I'm just going to read. I love his description that he uses on Twitter and Instagram. It's just the best way to introduce him. Warlord of Weird. His milkshake brings all the freaks to the yard. Creator of Freak Show Wrestling, Snake Pit, and Lucha Libre Las Vegas. He also was in WWE under the name Kazarni from 2006 to 2009. So Vegas Bad Boys welcomes Sinbodi.
Hey guys, what's up?
How you doing?
Not much, man.
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
Thank you.
How you feeling a couple days out from the brutality of that match, which was a beautiful story, but it was like, oh man, there were some spots. Like, I'm so glad you're at the point in your career where you find just the right moments to do those brutal spots. You don't have to put your body through too much, but man, that was crazy.
Thank you, I think.
No, definitely, man.
It was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun. It was definitely a heavy hitting match for sure. I definitely like to work smart. I like to put out, but I do like to work smart.
Right.
Like I don't work with the jackass mindset of just hoping stuff pans out. Like I have a method to my madness, and you know, couple that with some spontaneity, but you know, and then tied together, wrap it up in storytelling or what have you. But you know, like you got to put out. You know, like that's how it's got to go. Like people can tell if you're phoning it in. And that's one thing I will never, ever, ever do. I don't care if I'm wrestling in front of 10 people or 10,000 people. I am never going to phone it in.
Yeah, that's the best thing about you is every single thing that you do has a purpose to it. And I think that it reads so well. I know.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. At FSW on Sunday, the 10th anniversary show, it was packed in there. It was amazing, the energy in the building. What do you feel when you know, look back and just see where A, FSW is gone, you know, in terms of its popularity, and B, just Vegas wrestling in general, and to have this kind of crowd, I mean, you've got to be proud like a good old papa just going, man, this is amazing.
Yeah, definitely proud papa for sure. Very proud to be a part of that show. It was a sold out show. I'm not a very egotistical performer, which is weird. I know I am the warlord of weird, but what is extra weird is I am just really not a creature of ego. I'm very pragmatic and very like I'm humbly like a little kid. Like I'm like a dreamer. I like this. I do what I do because like out of love, nothing else. You know, like I don't make smart business decisions or whatever. I do all of this out of creativity and love and passion. And so when I see fans enjoying what we're doing, enjoying our art, as physical as it is, like that's just the greatest thing ever. And yeah, for Las Vegas, I like to think I have played a small part in helping Las Vegas become a wrestling mecca. It's just a really cool thing to be a part of. You know? Like this is my adopted city. Like I'm from Toronto. I'm not born in Las Vegas. Right. But Las Vegas really took me in, and I've made a lot of friends and family and brothers, good brothers in this town and sisters, you know. So I'm definitely happy to entertain here and call Las Vegas my home. It's pretty awesome.
So, Sin, just just gotta tell you, man. Watching you, you coming into the ring for me never gets old. Because I'm gonna be honest with you, man. You have embodied like the essence of creepy, scary. Like, and I'm a grown.
Shucks.
I'm a grown ass man. No, I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm a grown ass man. And how you do your little head shake thing with the pig mask on, like it's just the shaking that just makes me a little uncomfortable. Like, God damn. What's your inspiration that came about with that is Sin Bodhi's entrance and persona and everything of that is creepy, weird, carnival feel?
Well, okay, so like I'm not just a guy that thought, hey, I'm going to be a circus character or a vampire or an astronaut or a lawyer or whatever. I am a legit circus guy. I was a circus strongman, circus freak, geek magician, whatever you want to call it. There's lots of different terms. Pain tolerance guy, threshold guy. So I parlayed that with wrestling, and that's really, you know, over the years and over flavor and taste and opinions and different experiences, you know, that character morphed into what it is now. And really, like, you know, you've heard Stone Cold back in the day saying, you know, like Stone Cold is really just him with the volume cranked. So that is essentially same situation here. You know, I'm putting everything that I love and am intrigued by, scared of, enamored by, you know, tripped out by, you know, I try to harness it and control it and kind of, you know, basically bake a cake with it. I'm putting all my ingredients into baking something that I think will be delicious for the audience, if that sounds not too weird. But I definitely have lots of different influences, wrestling and otherwise, like wrestling, music, comic books, movies, art, history, like just so many different things go into. And again, like, you know, bits, tiny, tiny bits and half bits of pieces from different people, places, things, and then, you know, smushed together with my own ideas. And, you know, like they say, there's nothing that's truly original. Like, I get all that stuff, but I think it's cool to, you know, have influences just to kind of control them and know where, like, you know, taking too much from one thing or one person is enough. Like, I never wanted to be a bargain basement Big Papa Pump or a bargain basement Shawn Michaels or whatever. I want, like, my influences to be very subtle and accumulative. So when you see me, that's what you see. You don't go, oh, what a cool, you know, Steven Seagal ripoff or whatever, Cyndi Lauper ripoff. I want to be me, you know. And I kind of, and to contradict that, I laugh because, like, speaking of the Steven Seagal thing, like, I laugh. Like, sometimes I'll hear the, when I had the long hair and the top hat, I heard Rob Zombie. Now with the, you know, with my egghead and my beard and my clown paint, I hear Spalding, which is fine. But that's like, to me, that's like, I don't look anything like Spalding. I don't look anything like Rob Zombie, but because I had long hair and a top hat, or because I have clown paint and a shaved head and beard, like that's like saying, like going back to the Seagal thing, that's like saying every honky with a black ponytail looks like Steven Seagal. Right. I think so, but it's just a quick thing to leap to. But, you know, like I'm happy with those influences. Like those Zombie and Spalding are definitely part of some of my influences. But I think if I painted my clown paint any which way or wore any kind of hat with long hair, I think they would have went to Zombie or Spalding. So yeah. I see other things in the foreground that other people don't pick up on, but I guess like I'm the one that put it together. So I would see those nuances. Like when I'm sticking out my tongue and gnarling my fingers and whatever, I think very much like Green Goblin and Dee Schneider from Stay Hungry, you know, Twisted Sister, and like, you know, Green Goblin on that flying bat motorcycle thing that he would ride. Like that those were some of my earlier kind of things that I thought about and all that stuff. You know.
Well, that makes I mean, I think that when you find subtleties like that and bring those little influences to a character, that's what completes a character. And the other thing too about that, like any good actor knows, you're always doing something with your character that is basically a secret that you don't reveal to the audience, which is great because those little nuances, you know what's going on, but the audience, if they're just being affected, it's a win. You're doing it. And I think that's the brilliance of it. I also think Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I think that people got, you know, get this connection to, you know, Cap and Spalding, and, you know, maybe Rob Zombie, is because of Freak Show Wrestling and just the whole idea of the Freak Show. I mean, the first time I heard about it, I thought the concept was great. What was the best part about being able to start Freak Show Wrestling for you? Was it working with certain people? Because you get to work with a member of GWAR, which is fucking amazing. You also got to bring in characters like Adolf Hitler, which is...
Heil, how you doing?
So, I mean, yeah, what is... Because to me, like that... to me is like my ideal dream world. Freak Show Wrestling encapsulates everything that I think I've ever loved or hated in this world, brought together in a nice package.
Well, you just sort of answered it right there. Dream world. I do what I want. You know, my dreams, my playing field, I scribble and doodle the pictures I want to doodle, you know, that I want to show people, you know? So I think, like, throughout wrestling, and, you know, I was always taught to be a good little soldier. So even if a promoter had an idea that I didn't overly think was brilliant, like, do what you're told, do it as best as you can, you know, all that kind of stuff. Whereas Freak Show, and the precursor to Freak Show, which was Dynamite Death Monkeys, which was like a live stage show that was mostly sideshow, strung together with very like wrestling character promo ideas. And we would finale with this very itchy and scratchy sort of avant-garde, scary, funny fight scene with scary, funny weapons. Like, so it wasn't just like, you know, I mean, as awesome as watching Sabu go through tables and chairs and stuff, I thought, well, that was Sabu's thing, you know?
Right.
What would I do? You know, I would always joke with Tommy Dreamer and tell him, you're not the innovator of violence. Tom and Jerry is, you know, like,
it's true.
You know, watching them picking up knives and spoons and turning spaghetti strainers into army helmets and just, you know, everything that Tom and Jerry would do, that was very influential to me. That's another weird influence that I don't think anybody would ever get a beat on. You know, like, I have so many influences that are just like just tons and tons and tons, like, that you might not ever notice or see, like, unless I literally was like, look right there, you'll see a little bit of this, look right there, you'll see a little bit of that. And so Freak Show is just a giant smorgasbord of all these different flavors and things that I liked, coupled with stuff that I thought was ridiculous about pro wrestling. Yeah. So it was funny, sexy, scary, holy shit, mixed with a farce.
You know, Sin, one thing that I noticed whenever, you know, I've seen you in matches, and I'm pretty sure I'm not the only person, because I'm not the smartest guy in the world, just one of them. But
me too, neither.
But what I will tell you is I've noticed that you are very attention to detail, even down to, like, you know, we're talking about the match on Sunday. You know, you always made it very apparent what was being brought out and the intention of how you were going to use it. Now, kind of a dumb question, but obviously that's something you planned. Do you think that is also a method to your method of madness and science when you are in the ring?
Yeah, I think, like, I'm a storyteller first and foremost. There's definitely moves that I like to do. There's definitely moves that I would like to do and don't do because of whatever reasons. Maybe, you know, I, in some ways I'm very athletic, and in some ways I am very not. So I am humbly pragmatic to be aware, to showcase my strengths and to hide my weaknesses. And I want to tell stories that is going to showcase both me and my opponent's strengths and diminish our weaknesses. I'm not a just get my shit in guy where we're just going to hit my usual spots. And I get so bored so quick. Like, I always want to find new stories to tell. And yeah, I have, like, you know, a handful of, you know, easy go-to spots if I brain fart and want to do something, you know, that's fine. But really, for an overall story arc, I look at every match like a different movie. Like, I don't want to watch the same movie twice. You know, I don't like repetition. Yeah. I want to tell different stories. And I think, not that I, like, again, pro wrestling is subjective art. I'm not right or wrong because I've got more RBIs than the next guy. I've got more goals, more yards run. You know, it's subjective art through and through. It's ice cream. It's all delicious, just different flavors, all that stuff. So instead of just, well, I'm going to hit this hurricanrana, I'm going to hit this move, I'm going to hit that move, I just think, well, what do I want to do? Do I want to put this guy's leg in jeopardy? Do I want to put this guy's career in jeopardy? Do I want to put this guy's, you know, he's got a wounded arm, so he can't hit his certain fancy clothesline finish, or I don't know, whatever the situation calls for. You know, is there a lot of kids in the audience? Is it a PG audience? Is it a 21 plus audience?
Right.
Is it an audience full of drunk hipsters that just want to see Crash and Burn? Like, what is in front of me? I don't know, pander to the audience, but I am aware of my audience. Like, as an old school wrestler would say, I listen to the audience.
Right.
And I can, you know, you can, it's like a dog smelling fear. Like, if I was to walk out in some of those silly things that I walk out in, you know, if I wasn't buying it, I'd be dead in the water. Because right. All the audience would sniff that and go, nope. But if I go out there, like you said, you're a grown-ass man and you were kind of creeped out, like, I got to go out there owning my shit. I've never, like, anytime I've ever stopped to eyeball somebody that was running their mouth, as soon as I locked eyes with them, they would just start kind of shrinking. And like, I'm going to get my ass kicked this week for kind of saying that, for tempting Murphy's Law or whatever. But in 20 years of doing this, there's never been any man or beast that didn't back down when I looked at them. Hey, screw you, clown, blah, 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 stupid. As soon as I turn to them, they just wilt.
Yeah, because you definitely have that embodiment of, you know, this guy's going to take it to the end. You know, like, there's no limit. You know, in I think that is part of the creepy part that I see whenever you do your entrance and when you're, you know, in the ring, is like, there may not be a limit to what we've seen.
Absolutely
you
not.
Do.
Absolutely not. Yeah. zero limits. And it's funny because I'm such a movie, TV show, cartoon, comic book dreamer. Like, I lived in those things. I lived a very, very secluded childhood where, like, didn't get to play with all my buddies after school every day like most kids do. I got, you know, trucked on a bus to this little country farm where I lived, you know, so visiting and playing with my buddies was like maybe a once a week thing, but it was like an ordeal. Like, it was like for my parents that worked so much to like take me into town and let me have a sleepover or whatever I was doing. It was like an event, like kind of like once a week if I was lucky kind of a thing. So I really just grew up with my head in the clouds, imagining all these things. Like, I was kind of more like Jim Carrey from The Cable Guy. Like, I grew up with TV shows and comic books and wrestling. And so that's kind of how my brain works. So when I tell these stories, you know, I'm just so influenced by that stuff. And I just think, like, one of the stories, so many, many different influences. I could go into that for days. But like, the one that I was going to let you guys know about is, and this was even not even like, I wasn't even a kid. This was like, I don't know what year this movie came out in, but I want to say there was a movie. I want to say it was Gattaca.
Yeah. Ethan Hawke. Yeah.
Yep. And like, so there's all these like advanced super soldier guys and he's just this regular schmuck.
Yeah.
But he's so determined to, you know, be amongst these like superheroes that he, you know, he gives himself these like heightening surgeries that are brutally painful. He does all this stuff to himself to just keep up and just to, you know, do his thing. And the thing that I'll never forget about that movie was, so people are like, how'd you get away with it? There's no way a normal guy could pull off what you pulled off amongst all these superheroes and blah, 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 blah. And the character's answer blew my mind. And it stays with me to this day. It was like, you know, all these guys as big and as jacked or whatever as they are and this and that and this and that, you know, if they were going to swim out to the ocean to, you know, go retrieve a whatever or this and that or the other, they're going to leave enough juice to get back. They got to swim out there, but they got to have enough energy to swim back. He goes, I just went out there thinking I'm going to swim as far as I can swim.
Yeah.
Never going to look back.
Yep.
I'll worry about that when I get as far as I can go. That's how I think. Like, I just think there's guys that can jump higher. There's guys that have bigger muscles. There's guys that know more wrestling moves. But I'll compare creativity and I'll compare heart with anybody. I don't care if they're the giantest legend in the world. I'll compare heart and creativity toe-to-toe with anybody.
Do you think when it comes to young wrestlers, I know you training wrestlers at FSW, we got to see firsthand, and it is one hell of an experience to be involved in your class watching the students, because the students really respect and listen to what you're saying, which is great. And you're also very, very interactive with allowing the students to give each other feedback, which is another plus. So if anyone's looking at going to wrestling school, I highly recommend FSW. I can't say enough about what I've actually seen and witnessed myself.
Thanks, man.
Absolutely. So
yeah, I'm very proud of the FSW Snake Pit. A lot of great kids, a lot of good guys have come out of that school and still are to be coming out. Like, guys and girls are just, they're working so hard, and there's a lot of great talent coming out of here.
And with that, do you think as a young wrestler, as these young wrestlers are trying to discover personas and characters, do you think that sometimes in wrestling, kids are thinking too safe in terms of, you know, I want to be a star. I see myself this way. I see myself that way. And they don't tend to embrace the fears that they actually have. And I think that sometimes if you explore that side of things that you're kind of uncomfortable with, you find characters that are way more interesting than just totally. The old baby face, the old heel, the same old, same old. What do you do?
You definitely got to step out of your comfort zone. I try to live my entire life out of my comfort zone. Like you have to step out. You know, that's totally what you have to do. Like you can learn all the mechanics. You can learn psychology and this, that, and the other. You can be jacked or you can be high flying or you can be this, that, or the other, but you got to take chances.
Is there someone that stands out to you right now or one or two people who are going along those lines and have that you've seen that you think have kind of found that in terms of, you know, finding characters that maybe when you first met the person, you know, you saw something there, but you didn't see the full development yet. Anyone stick out in your mind as wrestlers who have kind of taken their careers and started to run with it?
Tons, but if you want to narrow down, like, you know, out of my school, on WWE, just in general, you know, current guys just across the planet, like, where you want me?
Let's go with actual within the school, because I know that, you know, the Steak Pit's got some great talent. So, you know, and you've been doing it for a while. So, you know, who have you seen that, you know, really stand out to you as, you know, they get it, they're on their way?
In the school, as far as guys that are on their way and that are getting it and are very talented and are willing to try different things, I'll go with Damian Drake. He just started with AAA, and he got that connection through FSW Snake Pit. Yep. And, you know, we cracked the door open for him, and he kicked it down.
Yeah.
All him.
Yep.
You know, I mean, he's like this parkour genius. Like, I mean, he's just got that Spider-Man-esque athleticism.
Yes.
He's very, very good. And he's at the beginning of his journey. Like, he's can't be 3, 4, 5 years in tops. I don't know exactly what it's been, but I remember I coached his from his very first day, and he knocked it out of the park from his very first day. I put him through an old Ron Hutchinson drill to cap off his first day, which is called Pain, Torture, and Agony, what he actually named his book after.
Wow.
And
wow.
Damian Drake killed it, and I just knew. I was like, this kid's going to be something.
Wow. That's pretty awesome. Yeah, I can't say enough good things about watching him, and I think that your development has definitely given him the right direction, because he's definitely a physical freak. He can do things that are just like, oh my God.
And I can't, I'm not going to take credit for teaching him everything he knows. I taught him a good chunk.
Right.
But, you know, he's had, you know, D'Lo and Disco and Kenny, right, and just so many other dudes, Modest, other guys, you know, different guys that have led him along. But I definitely like to think I contributed pretty well. And he brought talent and heart to the table. And, you know, between all of us, between Jake and between all of us, we can damn near teach you every trick in the book. We cannot teach you heart. You right. need to bring that to the table. So I'll go with Damian Drake on that one.
So kind of going with, you know, speaking about heart, obviously you followed your heart throughout your career and also your passion and not only giving back the things that you love that inspired your life, but also, you know, like we're speaking of, you know, FSW and Snake Pit. Is there anything that you kind of think of if someone were to come in FSW and, you know, they had that same creativity, that same, you know, spark, but we're looking to do something similar creative that you have done with the Sembodi character. Do you think that that's something that would be a treat for you to encounter, or what are maybe some ways you would approach that if that individual was really just dead set on going in that direction like you did?
I got no problems with that. I didn't invent being a clown. I didn't invent being a sideshow freak. I didn't invent being a monster or nothing like that. Just this past Saturday in Texas, I wrestled a guy named Malico, who is also like a clown character. We kind of did like a clown versus clown, clown on clown violence kind of a thing.
I like it.
And he doesn't look like a conventional clown. I think I, look fairly interesting. I don't think I look like exactly like some typical clown either. But he's almost got this sort of like white voodoo tree wizard kind of a thing going on.
Really?
Very interesting character. My wife was kind of popped when I was showing her some of his promos, and he kind of sounds like Roger Rabbit, sort of. He's got this cartoony, creepy voice, and he's got this weird voodoo sort of look to him. And he's a lot of fun. He was great timing, good head on his shoulders, good grasp of his character. We just kind of went out there and played, and I think everybody was pretty damn entertained. So that was neat. I've wrestled other guys that are, trying to do something like that. Well, this guy, Malico, had a very good handle on his, very good understanding on his story, his mythos, his character, all that jazz. Where I've wrestled other guys and I'm just like, all right, this is just some schmuck and clown paint. No, but I'll make the best of it. It's fine. It's no problem. Other guys that are influenced, whether by me or by the same stuff that I was influenced by, like, that's cool. Like, Bray Wyatt keeps on coming up. Everybody keeps on bugging me about Bray Wyatt. Like, well, I don't mind that he took a whole bunch from me. Like, it wasn't by accident. Like, we weren't two guys on separate sides of the planet where he just did accidentally stuff. Like, from my mouth to his ears, he would ask me questions and I would be transparent and give him answers. And, he's been influenced. I'm kind of a little bit more, it's totally cool by me, but it would be nice for him to be like, yeah, Bodie was a good influence for me. But when he tells everybody he came up with it by himself, that's kind of like, well, that's not true.
Right.
And that's sort of disheartening. Like, he doesn't owe me anything, but it would just be a cool brother thing to kind of be like, yeah, just for example, like, I don't care about the butcher's apron and the fedora and all the stuff, or like even like all the funhouse stuff, all that stuff. I'm not so concerned about it. It just, it would be nice to, get a little like, hey, this was the guy, like, this is the Carl Perkins to my Elvis Presley,
Yeah, exactly.
And the biggest thing for me is like, all that stuff is like, whatever. But for me, the only stingy part of it, like, I'm not a whiner, I'm not a complainer, like, I'm happy for him. He's a good dude. I like him. But I just, like, when he asked me, like, why do you call that finishing move Tallulah Bell? And I said, I named it for my deceased sister. Which I legitimately have a deceased sister. Between me and my little brother, my mom miscarried, who would have been Sarah. And I didn't want to call the – I was going to call the move Goodnight, Sweet Sarah. But I thought, that's really going to upset my mom, potentially, if she sees that. And that's the last thing I want to do. So I just fictionalized the name. And so, like, kind of you saying, like, who's guys that, when you first met, you thought would really be something interesting. And when I met Bray, he was brand new, like, we were at FCW. He didn't know anything about wrestling. He just got hired and he wanted to learn. He wasn't there just to phone it in. Like, he really wanted to learn. He was creative and excited and passionate. I respect that, and I'm pretty transparent. Like, I'm not a hoard stuff to myself. Like, I think if I don't help my industry, well, good am I,
Yeah.
So he asked me, why do you call that move Tallulah Bell? And I told him, and I've told this on many a podcast, I never cared why you called a clothesline, or a body slam. It was self-explanatory.
Right.
Why a DDT? Why Goodnight Irene? Did somebody kill some hooker named Irene? Like, why? What's the mythos? So Tallulah Bell, I named for my sister. And he said, my dead sister. He said, why would you do that? And I said, well, her, just like my opponent, once I hit him with that move, they're not getting up.
Yeah.
And he just thought, man, that's really harsh. And I said, yeah, that's why I did it. And then when I got canned, then out came Abigail. Mm-hmm. So that's about the only thing that he's taken a lot of stuff that is so parallel, which is fine. That's just the only stingy part of what he has taken. And I don't even care that I'm happy that he's made, a good chunk of change off of doing what he does. That's great. It just would be, just to me, cool karma, cool brotherhood to be like, yeah, Bodie was the dude that really influenced me. That would be nice.
That'd be really
fun. And too, like, and I don't, like, when I see guys, like, healing on him for copying me, like, I don't put it over because, like, really don't need to pick a fight with a dude that's at the company I want to work with. Like, I would love to be, you know, I did the guest coaching at the right. WWE Performance Center. I don't want to be a dickhead and, you know, even if I'm right, I consider myself right, but I don't want to be, like, you know, I want to get all up in his face about artsy-fartsy stuff. Like, this is a bit, like, I've taken stuff from Cowboy Bob, stuff from Green Goblin, stuff from Joker, stuff from Undertaker, right. stuff from Doink, stuff from Jake, stuff from D. Schneider, like, you know. So I'm happy to put over where I got it, but I don't owe them anything, and they don't owe me anything. That's how I kind of feel about Bray. I just think it would be cool. It would be just good brotherhood again.
Well, I think it would be awesome. I think it would be awesome if they, you know, would consider having you guest appear on the Funhouse.
You know? And I told him, like, even when we were texting back, I'm like, dude, like, I don't mind you taking so much, but, like, you know, throw me a freaking bone, like,
yeah.
just, you know, like, he's like, oh, bro, and I'm like, I need your bro-ness. It would be nice for you to, you know, like,
right.
put your money where your mouth is, metaphorically, you know, like, just put a good word in, you know, like, told him, like, I just want to, I'm not old, but I'm not young either. I would like right. to do this for a few more years and then taper into being like a cool, you know, some kind of regular coach or character development coach or a writer or an agent, or, you know, producer or something. And I'm just like, dude, you could help that along, you know?
Yeah.
So again, I really don't want to pick a fight with a guy that's a top guy at a company that I want to be at, because that's never going to work out well, you know?
Right.
Like, I am a team player. I like to be a team player, and I'm happy for him and anybody else that is successful doing this. You know, like, I would just like to fit in somewhere along the way.
Yeah.
You know, Jake was always, like, so funny about it. He's like, brother, you're ahead of your time. And I'm like, all that means is I'm going to die poor.
I can barely imagine him saying that.
Oh, dude. Yeah, like, it's funny. Like, so if you do all the DNA, all that stuff, like, my great great uncle is Nikola Tesla.
No shit.
So, yeah. So if he invented electricity and I invented freakshow wrestling, I guess one of us is a genius. One of us fell short. But I think, you know, Thomas Edison sort of yeah. swiped a lot of Nikola stuff.
Yep.
You know, Bray might have Edison to me a little bit, and it's cool. You know, but I would just, again, I would like to be there to help, you know, develop and create for the next generation. Like, when I did the coaching spot, I was tickled pink. Like, I felt like a little kid in a candy store all week. Like, it was so cool. And having, like, the young talent, like, opening up their minds and listening, and just, you could see light bulbs going off as I was telling them stuff. It was just such a great feeling. And again, like, I'm not old, but I'm not young either. So I think if I could transplant my brain into some of these young dudes' bodies, like, some of these dudes, there's guys there that are like 6'5", 7 foot, 7'5". Like, there's superheroes in that facility. Like, there's giants. Like, again, I'm just shy of 6'2", 230 pounds. I felt like a midget.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm just like, man, there's some superheroes walking around here. Like, my brain was just going a mile a minute, like, giving them suggestions. And I'd like to think they were all, you know, had fun with me there. I had fun being there. So hopefully I get to do that again. And even told Bray, I'm like, dude, I just want to taper into that coaching job. I'll fucking write for you till the end of days.
Yeah.
I want to be back at the company that I grew up loving as a kid and still love to this day.
Do you think, in a sense, growing up a comic book fan, and you look at someone like Stan Lee, who created these characters, but obviously couldn't be a superhero because he was never bit by a radioactive spider or something in real life, right?
Right.
So
I tried, man.
Yeah. Have you taken the nuclear poison that the gamma rays that Hulk taken? The effect, though, of being able to create something like that, do you see yourself almost in a sense that is, you know, something that your eventual legacy might lead to, where, you know, you ended up being a creator of characters because you do get a chance, you know, to help, obviously, the students at FSW, potentially, hopefully, they get their heads out of their asses and, you know, see what, you know, potential is having by getting you on there in the WWE and being part of that creative process. Would that be a fair comparison, that you get to be then almost an author of comic books and use those talents that, you know, have these bodies and, you know, minds that you can mold?
Yes, I would love for that to happen. I have so much fun booking for guys, or agenting for guys, and like, I love watching the little light bulbs pinging on the top of their heads, and it just, it's the coolest. Like, it's business and karma smashed together. Like, yeah. I hate the term, like, oh, it's just business. Bull fucking shit. It's all personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like it's like you are following your dreams. And here's the kind of clutchy problem with being a pro wrestler. Like, if you're a lawyer or you're a stripper or whatever, if you get canned, you can go work at a million other law firms or a million other strip clubs. But if you're a wrestler, there's only really, you know, one or two or three games in town, and WWE being the biggest by a landslide. So like, if somebody decides to kind of clip your wings, you're kind of euchred, you know. And yeah, I've been lucky enough to like we're just having this discussion earlier, me and D'Lo, about like the term journeyman. Like, some guys use that as a derogatory term,
right?
I kind of don't. Like I love entertaining humans. I think, you know, putting smiles on the real life humans, like the ones that are working the fryer, the, you know, working the drive-through, single mom waitresses, cancer researchers, tow truck driver, you know, every real human. It's our privilege as a performer, mm-hmm, to like put smiles on those people's faces. So like, if we get to do stuff like that, like, I can't complain. If that's my job, that's what I get to do, you know. So even if I'm not at a major company, I do what I want. I'm like a polite anarchist. I do what I want. I just try not to hurt anybody's feelings along the way. Not a big stickler for rules. I'm pretty old school. Like, Nick, my real name, I don't have a Twitter or a Facebook or an Instagram. Sinbody sure does. He likes to whore out all the shows that he does and all the merchandise and all the different things that he's doing. You know, I want people to buy tickets to go see the shows and, you know, have fun and everything. So I can't complain. Even when I'm feeling artsy and, oh, woe is me or whatever, like, I'm not a complainer. I have the fucking greatest life ever. I get to travel the world and entertain people. And that's, let's quote Steve Austin, that's the bottom line.
So, Sin, you know, you speak about, you know, Sin Bodhi, and you speak about yourself. Do you ever have those moments that, you know, a lot of wrestlers talk about where, you know, the lines get blurred in sometimes, or are you able to keep an even balance, or, you know, or maybe are there certain scenarios to where sometimes, you know, Sin comes out? It just does, you know.
The lines are definitely blurred, but I am healthily aware.
Okay.
So, like, I'll give you two giant opposite examples from two of my closest earthlings. So Edge, Adam, is very adamant on Edge and Adam being two very different creatures. Jake the Snake and Aurelian Smith, on the other hand, it's sort of like 99-1. He's Jake 99% of the time, and you get the 1% of Aurelian. Where me, I'm somewhere in the middle. Hey, speaking of dudes, I was putting you over on this podcast that I'm doing right this second. I just gave Damian Drake a hug.
Oh, hey, tell him it's us.
Put you over, so you owe me a donut or some cotton candy or something. Not telling.
Tell him it's the Vegas Bad Boys.
It's the Vegas Bad Boys, guys. Yes, there you have it. There's your quote, sweet unquote quote from Damian Drake. So where Jake is like, he's Jake 99.9% of the time, and like, just when we're sitting like having dinner or something, just me and him, like, you get glimpses of Aurelian where he's like, brother, you okay? Everything good? You know, he's a very sensitive, sweet person. But as soon as other people are around, he kind of gets in that class clown mode where he feels like he has to perform, and it's a safe place for Aurelian to hide within Jake. Whereas Edge is just built totally different. You know, he's very adamant of like Adam versus Edge and all that kind of stuff. Me, somewhere in the middle, maybe not 50-50, but maybe I'll go, you know, I don't know, 70-30-ish, you know, like Nick, milk and cheese don't agree with Nick's stomach. Nick has bills to pay. Nick had to deal with getting his green card. Nick had a flat tire. Nick had, you know, car problems, and it cost, you know, a few bucks, and this and that, and this and that. Nick doesn't get to see his parents a whole lot because they live, they're a 50-hour car ride north of where I live and stuff. Whereas Sin, you know, he gets to eat fire and bang, you know, bendy clown girls and kick midgets and, you know, just do the funnest thing. He gets to travel the world and do all sorts of crazy stuff, you know? So there is, I can appreciate there is a safe, fun place in that character. And again, you know, like airport nest says that, you know, if I'm walking through the airport and people go, whether they know me or whether they just go, what are you? You know, then that is a safe place to sort of be as far as like having like a force field around you.
Right.
Don't really see a whole lot of guys messing with me. You know, I'm not Chuck Norris by any means, but I think when I walk around, I don't look like somebody you want to mug, you know? So I think that sort of like that exterior kind of is a privacy force field, a safety force field or whatever, where Nick, he can be the one that gets, you know, butthurt about something or something's kind of bugging him or this or that or this or that, where, you know, Sin is, you know, pretty fearless, pretty painless. Like Nick would be like, you want me to what? Go through tacks and tables and Legos and be out of your freaking mind? Where Simbodi is kind of like, yeah, bring that shit, throw some Jello and some cotton candy in there too, you know? So it's just a funner, safer place to be sometimes. You know, so I don't know, like, if that answers your question in any kind of weird artsy fartsy way. I don't know.
No, that was a perfect gust of artsy fartsy explanation off of that. but what I will ask you with the next question is, speaking of that, I have to be honest with you, man, that would make for a perfect horror movie or comic, just character wise in general. Have you thought about, you know, down the road, maybe you know, getting involved in maybe doing that?
Well, wait a minute. You're talking to the man who was the Zombie King.
I know. It's called segueing. So the people are listening who don't know that, you know, he can elude that. But thank you.
I've done some, you know, some horror movie stuff, some stunt work in horror movies. Literally last week. I've worked off and on for years with Full Moon, who does like all like the, you know, the Puppet Master movies and all those different crazy sort of like kind of cult classic horror movies and stuff. And we just filmed something called Halloween Night, which I have like a cameo as me in the movie where I'm beating the crap out of actually another one of the wrestling students from FSW, who is one of the managers who we taught to take really fun, sort of like very Bobby Heenan-esque kind of bumps and how to be a really hands-on manager.
Oh, please! Please say it's Primo.
Bobby Beamers.
Oh, Beamers. Okay. Yeah. Sure.
And so I think, and Primo is awesome too, by the way. Like both of those guys in different ways and different spots. Like, we really taught to be, you know, hands-on managers, like very practical managers, because I think you can only stand there in a sparkly suit for so long before you need to be instrumental.
Yeah,
you know, so I would always show guys how to, you know, when to get big, when to get small, when to do this, when to do that, and all these things. Like, you're not just to be a manager isn't just to stand there in a sparkly suit. You know, like, you have to know your shit. And so Bobby, being a smaller guy, we showed him a lot of kind of fling you around spots. Like, he's that little weaselly Don Knotts kind of a character.
Yeah,
you know, you're begging to get flung, and flung indeed he got. So it was fun ping-ponging him all around the artisan when we were shooting that movie last week. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. But as far as like a Simbodi movie, is that what you mean? Like a documentary, man, kind of a thing or something?
I would say, even to the point of, if you had the opportunity to come out with a movie that is pretty much a reflection or in as close to the likeness of the Simbodi character. And how, you know, the way I pictured it is exactly how you described it. You know, you have a man who's fighting inner demons of himself. And maybe the backstory could be how this kid, you know, always kind of kept the beast from within. And then it leashes out. You know, and yeah, that's a storyline that's probably been done in many horror movies. But I could just see it and visualize it with you. And it really, honestly, would go to see that movie immediately.
Thanks, man. Well, hopefully if there's any movie producers listening to the podcast, you know, I'm down to talk. But I've actually written like different scripts. Like, I mean, I'm an artsy guy, so writing, drawing, like thinking of characters and storylines and that kind of stuff, I've definitely done that. And weirdly that you actually say that, again, last week when we filmed that Halloween night, I reconnected with another producer friend of mine who does a lot of the horror movies and stuff, and I gave him a script couple of years back, and he was just like, I've had that script in my brain, I really want to do it, would you still be interested in doing it? And I said, yes, I would. And it doesn't have my character per se, but there is a villain that is definitely close to my heart and definitely that I wrote thinking not so much about myself, but I was definitely a piece of that character. And the story is really ridiculous, and it involves lots of like cameos from wrestlers and guys that would definitely be involved and that I've talked to. Hey, if I get this off the ground, would you guys want to do this? And I have so many different wrestlers. And what it is, the long and short is like, these evil babies get unleashed by this evil character, the Sin character, and they kill all the superheroes. And then the government realizes, well, crap, we've got to do something before these babies like overrun the whole world. So kind of like Armageddon, how they got all the dudes to like to destroy the asteroid before it killed the world. You know, like, so they're going to prison release like all these supervillains, and they're going to be the new heroes in exchange for freedom, but they got to defend against this evil dude with all these evil babies running around. It's kind of like a comedy horror thing, you know.
Dude,
but as far as a serious one, I would definitely be down to do like a serious one. But
well, I tell you what, I'm going to send as much energy as possible into making that into reality. The only thing that if you need an extra person to be a victim, that is a small dream of mine, is I want to be in a horror movie and be killed in the most gruesome way.
I'd be happy to kill you.
All right, there you go. I'm down 100%.
Actually, like, it's funny that you're saying that about too, about like, you know, thinking about like character stuff and like the, you know, the guy kind of holding the monster within and all that stuff. Like I thought like that from the start for, you know, almost like character is almost like a weird kind of cliche word, but for lack of a better term, character, because I think if you have such a close to the heart character, that it is sometimes hard to differentiate. You put so much of yourself into it. Like when I got released from WWE, I knew I was going to do a lot of media and stuff like that, like, you know, plugging indie dates and this and that. I thought, well, just with the landscape, it changed a little bit since when I started, where guys were kind of just cutting these wrestling promos and that sort of thing. I thought, well, being this freakier dude, I don't want to just talk like Nick and talk like all nicey nice and just explain stuff with like brutal, open, honest kayfabe and stuff. And I didn't want to do this growly, I'm going to get you, brother, kind of promo either. I thought, well, I'm going to talk to them about real life stuff, but I would just, you know, like, I mean, that is harsh, or, you know, this, that, or the other thing, but stuff that definitely influenced me, or what might have influenced me, you know, inadvertently. And I told this story about when I was born, which is a total shoot, totally true. And I haven't told it in years, and I will tell you guys in a second. But after I told the story, like the interview, the dude that was doing the interview, like after we went off air, he's like, are you bullshitting? You're lying, right? No, it's totally true. He's like, Jesus Christ, I'm scared of shit. Like, you're the scariest dude ever. So the story is, in a nutshell, when my mom was giving birth to me in Toronto, the hospital was overrun with babies. Another reason I thought of the babies were babysitting. But there was just an overcrowding of babies. Like, they just had, I guess everybody was, you know, 9 months earlier, we're feeling pretty froggy, I guess. I don't know. But so there was babies being born left and right. So there was just, it was chaos there. And for whatever reason, one of the nurses screwed up and gave my mom the epidural, you know, the needle gimmick in the spine. They gave it to her incorrectly. Caused her excruciating pain. So they had to give her all this morphine to like subside the pain, which made her crazy delusional. And so when she finally like gave birth to me, they couldn't let her hold me because they were scared that she was like panicking and freaking out and, you know, hallucinating. They thought, well, this chick can't hold this kid, you know, he's gonna get two pointed onto the ground or something, you know. So they wouldn't let her hold me, and which only furthered her delusions, thinking the kid, and she's screaming, they kidnapped my baby, they killed my baby, all this stuff. Wow. And they didn't know what to do with me because, you know, I should just be sitting in my mom's arms. So there was such an overcrowding of area that, like, where they had like the maternity ward and stuff was totally like over full. So they took this janitor's closet, and it's not like a little closet. It was like, you know, like 6-foot by 4-foot room, but had no windows. They cleared out all the cleaning supplies.
Oh,
they
put
my gurney in there. So for the first 2 weeks of my life, I was in this windowless room, and the only physical contact, I didn't, wasn't held or kissed or coddled by my mom or suckled by my mom in my first 2 weeks of my life. I was in this dark room that I was just, you know, fed, and I'm sure nurses came in every few minutes checking me or feed me or this or that. But like when I got home, my mom said I was like the quietest baby. I never cried ever.
Wow.
And she figured that I just got used to very quickly knowing the crying didn't work. I was going to be alone.
Wow.
And that's what she thought, and that's also why she thought I ended up being so artsy and kind of introverted, because I just knew the safe place, the safe bet was just to bank on myself and just think by myself, and perfect world is a world of one, as the philosophers like to say, you know. So she would tell me that she thought I grew up very much the way I did because I just learned from day one, you're by yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whole time that you were saying that, I was hearing creepy background music the whole time, and like thinking of an intro.
I will be visiting you in your dreams too.
Oh my God.
See you soon, Junior.
you have totally broken him. It's fucking awesome.
Right. I'll be the guy in clown shoes and a pitchfork and diapers. I'll see you tonight.
Actually, he had that last night. That was his.
Hey, but I paid for that. Okay,
yeah, true.
I paid for it.
Yeah, that was hard earned. but the stories like that is definitely what I like. So obviously, you know, I was a newborn. I do not remember that like consciously, but I guess, you know, maybe between her telling me this and between, you know, subconscious this and that or whatever. So I just thought, you know, these life experiences and these life stories to apply to a character that would make that character sound pretty daunting and stuff. But those are drawn from real life. So,
yeah.
You know, that's what I think makes it a little extra creepy, a little extra organic and so forth. And I think that's what a good character needs is a dose of organicness.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dose of, you know, as outrageous or as over the top as any character needs to be, it also needs to have a semblance of grounded reality, however funny or brutal or whatever it's going to be. But it just needs, reality and fiction needs to couple together to make the strongest story, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. I definitely. So what I will tell you with that, we have a segment that, you know, these guys give me an opportunity to kind of have a segment with everybody we interview. And but I gotta sell it to you, you know.
All right.
So without further ado, we are going to bring on the segment, which is called the Oh Shit segment. Basically what this is, Simbodi, is you are going to tell us a story of a time, whether it was in the ring, outside the ring, in the bathroom, in a grocery store, inside of a funeral home, at a carnival, in a circus, anywhere you can think of, to where you experience something so out of nowhere, so out of left field, that it left you feeling, oh shit. Simbodi, oh shit moment.
Oh, geez. I probably give you 20 hours worth of those. Yeah, so many. I'll give you a funny oh shit moment. Way 100 years ago, me and Joe Legend, who was just Joe in WWF way back in the day, we were doing a tag team match. He also came out of Rod Hutchinson's school.
Okay.
Awesome wrestler, awesome guy. And he really kind of taught me a lot early on. Like, I hit the road in England when I barely probably had 20 matches under my belt. And I want to say Joe got me booked over in the UK. And we were doing a show in Liverpool at whatever opera house, whatever. Like, where you were kind of, the ring was on one side of the stage, like on the stage. And you're playing one side that had like two or three levels, or maybe three levels of like balcony.
Okay.
So it was kind of neat. It was weird. But so over there, you know, it was an easy, cheap heat to do, you know, some kind of like WWF ripoff stuff, because they didn't really get to see that a whole lot over there. Like, they knew about it, but they didn't get to see it live.
Right.
So Edge and Christian, being, you know, somebody I grew up with and somebody who trained with Joe, we thought it'd be funny to do the 10-second pose, you know, the flash photography thing and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in, we did this in Liverpool, the home of John Lennon. So we did our impression of John Lennon, where I looked at Joe and pointed like my finger like a gun at him, and I pulled the trigger and Joe took a bump. We thought it was funny. Liverpool did not. And next thing you know, there are people swarming the ring, and me and Joe literally had to go back to back and just start slugging everything that came at us. And we literally body surfed out of there on security.
Wow.
We were like, the next day we were in like the newspaper, BBC, radio, all the stuff. I remember the promoter, Brian Dixon, he was so angry. He was like, you two fucking bloody objects, you got such hate, you guys on the TV and the telly and all this stuff. And we're like, what's your problem, old man? Like, we just got you wicked, like, publicity. Like, what's your problem, you know?
Right.
No, it's bad hit, you fucking bastards, and all this stuff. And he's like, I'm just thinking, we got your promotion over across this whole island, you know? Like, what's your problem, you know? And then when it came time, so we would do like, I was there for, I don't know, like a couple months or something. And we did this like loop around the island. We go to like these, like the holiday camps, which is kind of like these small little like resorts and stuff. And then we did like the, you know, these opera house kind of shows and different things and stuff. And by the time we came back to Liverpool, Dixon tells me and Joe that we're off that night with pay. He goes, it's too dangerous for you guys to go out there. They're going to fucking kill you. You're not wrestling. Like, trust me, they're like, over here, like, they shoot referees that fuck up soccer games, you know, like, fans yeah. don't play in England. And me and Joe were like, whatever, you know, like, let us wrestle. Like, it's cool. You know, so he's like, no, you got your pay, so just don't even worry about it, you bastards, you know, whatever. And so we're like, all right. So begrudgingly, we didn't work that night. And we were sitting in one of those little private balcony boxes, like watching the rest of the show. And I had like a sin hoodie on at the time. Like, I had like the wings on my back and had my name. And it just took one fan to notice we were up there. And I was like, look, it's those bastards. And they started throwing like tomatoes, God knows whatever they were throwing to us. Like, oh shit, they remember. Jeez.
Damn.
And then Dixon was like, oh, I told you so, you fucking bloody on deck. You know?
Wow.
And all this stuff. And,
oh my God!
So needless to say, we were villains for the longest time over there. Like, I probably off and on, I probably spent almost, I want to say, just about a year and a half broken up over there.
Wow!
You know, a month here, a couple months there. You know, at a time like early in my career, and I actually just went back there. It's been forever, and I just went back there a few weeks ago, and I had a blast.
Yeah.
But that was definitely a holy shit. Like, how do you get out of this?
Yeah.
And we just hit everything aside. And I'm a peaceful guy. Like, I can physically, I can go, like, I can shoot, but I don't want to. Like, I'm way artsier. Like I wouldn't want her to fly, you know? I feel like my wife laughs at me. Like, if I got to kill a fly or something, she's like, what's wrong? I'm like, oh man, I killed this fly. You know? So, like, I'm capable. I just don't like that, you know? Like, I grew up as a martial arts guy. Like, that was my family trade. Like, my dad was a ranked fighter. My mom had a dojo. And, like, so I didn't just go train at the local family karate. Like, I got to train because, you know, my dad would travel, so I would go. And, you know, 6 months with this kickboxing champion, you know, a year with this Shotokan champion, 2 years with this Muay Thai champion, and whatever. So, like, again, I'm not Chuck Norris by any means, but I can go.
Yeah.
And I just never like clobbering people for real. If I'd knock out somebody in a karate tournament, my dad would be like, yeah, look at my kid. And I'd just be like, yeah. And inside I was like, I want to throw up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here in pro wrestling, like, yeah, we tank each other pretty good. And, you know, steel chairs and concrete are exactly that. Like, it's real concrete, real steel chairs, not an actor dressed up as concrete, not an actor dressed up as steel chairs. But it's all fun and games. Like, we're there to tell a story. We're there to tell a story of good and evil. We're not there to, like, just, you know, go for the winner's share of the purse. We're there to tell a story.
Right. Exactly.
And if we do clobber each other, to me, it's funny. Like, if you clobber me, I'm just going to giggle and be like, it's cool. You know, but I don't want to legitimately clobber. I don't like that. But there, like, we had kind of no choice. Like, the fans just kind of didn't give us a choice. Like, we had to get out of there with our lives.
So when you went back, did that story ever get brought up again, or did anybody recognize you? I mean, at all? Because I mean, that is a fantastic story.
Well, where I wrestled in England, to be fair, was hours and hours away from Liverpool. I wrestled at the WAW show at the Carroll Road, which was like one of the biggest shows that was like a non-WWE wrestling show in like British history, which was pretty cool to be a part of.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And but I want to say like that was in Norwich, and I want to say that's like hours and hours away from Liverpool. But I mean, I've wrestled in Liverpool since then, like within those first couple of years, and fans again just kind of took me as an asshole villain, and that was that. And coming back, like this time, I was sort of weirdly a good guy, and I was wrestling a guy that was about 6'9", so like I was in sort of a pretty good position to be cheered. Like, you know, I'm the underdog, I'm the crazy psycho dude, but I'm still the underdog when you're wrestling a guy that's Kane size in Brody Steele, who is awesome.
Yeah,
another super talented dude. I wish, I would love to bring him to Las Vegas. I think Vegas would love him.
Yeah,
yes.
And just more of like a, just scheduling and budgeting and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, when you're standing there facing a really scary 6'9" guy, maybe I can get a little sympathy as a crazy clown, you know, like. And for me, it's just like guys just say, like, "Are you a babyface? Are you a heel?" I'm like, whatever my opponent isn't.
Yeah,
I'm
sort right.
of that guy. Like, you put me against some indie darling that everybody likes, I'm mm-hmm. a bad guy. You put me against some local villain that nobody likes, I'm a good guy. It's just sort of, I'm a creature of situation.
That makes sense.
That makes any sense?
Yeah,
no, that makes perfect total sense. Yep.
Yeah. And like Carney was, because Arnie was so sort of elusive and short-lived, so it's not like, you know, if you book Coco Beware or AJ Styles or Boogeyman or Demolition or Sami Zayn or Sami Callihan or whoever, you kind of know what you're getting.
Right.
Or Sin Bodhi or Kazarni was such a weird, elusive thing. You kind of don't know, so you got to kind of see it as you get it, you know? So I think by proxy of who I'm against defines if I'm a good guy or a bad guy. Like, I don't change a whole lot if I'm a good guy or a bad guy. I might put stuff in different places, but I don't turn myself into Marty Jannetty if I'm a good guy. I don't turn myself into, I don't know, Ox Baker if I'm a bad guy. I kind of just do me. But, you know, there's ways of putting stuff in different places to tell the right story. So,
which is amazing because you're almost kind of like the dark. Because, you know, I remember those times I used to be terrified of the dark as a little kid. My parents say, there's nothing that can hurt you in the dark. And I'm thinking, but is there? How do you know? So it's like, you know, whenever I hear you say, you know, go either or, it's kind of like the dark. You never know. You know, whatever's going to happen.
I'm doing a podcast. That's why I'm out here. I'm getting what the hell are you loitering in this parking lot for? I'm pretending to be an adult. Jeff Cobb, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, you're under ROH contract. You can't be heard on anything. Get out of here. I was just talking to Mr. X. It's not Jeff Cobb.
Hey, Cobb.
You can't prove anything. Get out of here, Jeff Cobb, or whoever looks like Jeff Cobb.
Cobb's been on the show, too.
Yeah.
There you go. So you've had Damian Drake cameo, and you've had Jeff Cobb cameo. Too bad you guys can't see him. They both got faces for radio. So.
Oh, shit. Oh yeah, that's wow. Beautiful.
I teased Damian Drake that he's like the youngest grizzled old timer that I've ever met.
Yeah,
he's gonna like get me with his senior citizens card one of these days. Like, I loved watching you when I was growing up. He's like, fuck you. That's a respect to the student to coach around here, you know. Fuck you, coach. I love you, but fuck you.
That's funny. Hey, Sid, as we wrapping up now, man, you have any upcoming things you want to promote so folks can know about and we can let them know?
Oh, cool. Thank you. Yes. So got lots of different shows. Like, I just travel all over the place. Like, here at the Snake Pit, like, we train like throughout the week because all the coaches are like road guys.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We're always like me, D-Lo, Disco, Jake, Kenny, TJ Perkins is here teaching. Jeff Cobb just walked out of here. Davari comes in here sometimes. Like, it's just mm-hmm. always really great road guys to facilitate the learning and the knowledge here.
Yeah.
And then when I'm on the road, so like, I mean, I want to say in this last month, I've been everywhere from Texas to UK to Mexico. The next few weeks to a month, I'll be in Quebec, Louisville, Niagara Falls, back to Mexico, mm-hmm. a bunch of different places. But you can check out all those dates and events, all sorts of awesome promotions. If you see on my Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, it's all the same. It's all Sin Bodhi. It's all S-I-N-N and Bodhi like the tree, B-O-D-H-I. S-I-N-N-B-O-D-H-I. And you can see all the shows that I'm going to be on. We just did a really great, that 10th anniversary FSW show that we were talking about earlier.
Yes.
All the different shows that I'm going to be on, have been on, will be on, you'll see on my social media. It's all there. All the school info is all attached and tagged in some, you know, some of the posts. If you just scroll down, up and down, you'll see Snake Pit stuff, Lucha Libre Las Vegas stuff. You'll see, Resolution, CWF for Niagara Falls. You'll see NSPW in Quebec, OVW in Louisville, WAW in the UK. I'll be back there in November. IWRG in Mexico and some other places. I'll be back there and I want to say about a month and a half. So just tons and tons of really cool shows.
Yeah.
And if you want to see what I'm up to, just check me out on my social media. I always I laugh because I'll have like I'll answer something that some fan asks or whatever, and they're like, man, you're one of the few guys that ever like responds back. And I'm thinking, you're crazy enough to want to talk to me, I'll be crazy enough to want to talk to you. Like, I put my pants on one spandex leg at a time. Like, I'm not that guy. Like, I might not be able to get to every last single person, but I try my best. And if I just accidentally miss somebody or somebody along the way, like, no disrespect, but I try to respond just about everybody.
Right. I understand.
People seem stupefied by that. And I kind of don't get that. Like, I'm never going to be too cool for school kind of a thing. Like, you want to talk to me? I'll talk to you. It's cool.
Right. Well, see, look, man.
I answer the phone when you asshole called. Like, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
We appreciate it.
And that's what I was about to get to next, man. We want to actually thank you, man, for spending some time just chatting with us tonight, man. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Absolutely.
Everyone, Sin Bodhi.
Yay!
Ah! Awesome, man. Thank